Thanks.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Today, the Socrates Exchange returns for a new season of Philosophical Inquiry. The question we're examining this hour, do we have too much information? Long ago, only an elite few had access to knowledge, but today anyone with a computer, cell phone, or other communications device can gain information instantly from around the globe. It's to the point where people often complain about information overload or just having too much information. But what do we really mean by that? How do we define too much? And who decides what's too much? What's the difference between information and knowledge? When does more information lead to more truth? Can too much information lead us astray, down paths that compromise our safety, our health, our sense of well-being? And if we truly feel we have too much information, how do we shut it off without falling behind in a competitive world? Let's hear your thoughts. Again, it's the Socrates Exchange today, and the question we're pondering is, do we have too much information? Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, and the Socrates Exchange is funded in part by the New Hampshire Humanities Council. My co-host this hour is Nick Smith. He's an associate professor of philosophy at UNH, advisor to the university's Socratic Society, and project advisor to us here on the Socrates Exchange. And Nick, welcome. It's really nice to see you and to kick off the second season with you.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, explain the question here, Nick. Just give us a few themes that come up as we ponder this question.
Sure. Well, Socrates himself complained about suffering from a kind of information overload, in part because of the as we start just writing down things, it changes our mind, distinguished from oral histories where we remember things. And Socrates actually worried that our minds were becoming sort of softer and weaker simply with the written word. And there's a certain sense that every generation worries about the technologies making its youth somehow dumber and not as thoughtful and losing judgment. And of course, Socrates himself was accused of corrupting the youth. And there's this continual worry that the technologies are changing our children and something's going wrong. But we wonder if there's something different about what's happening to us right now. And if I can just read this quote from one of the Google founders, he claims, "Certainly if you had all the world's information directly attached to your brain or an artificial brain that was smarter than your brain, you'd be better off." Right? So this is one of the founders of Google, someone who's really driving our future, thinking that we really should have all information directly plugged into our brains, and wondering, what, is this good? Can we even, is it just nostalgia for a past where we had scarce information and we're just not able yet to enjoy all the information that we have now? If it isn't good, is it even possible to turn it around?
How do you do that? We've got lots to dig into, Nick. And I just want to remind our audience, the Socrates Exchange is different from our regular exchange programs. Nick is not an authority on what's right or wrong or whether the answer to this question is yes or no. Nick's job is to ask you the hard questions that make you examine your own thinking and help us see the underlying assumptions we all make. So when you call, stay on the line with us and help us tease out these questions. Our number here on the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today, the Socrates Exchange returns to the airwaves. Nick Smith, let's go right to the phones now. And Guy is calling from Newmarket. Guy, good morning. And what are your thoughts on this question? Do we have too much information?
Good morning. My name is Guy DeBoer. And I would have to say that I don't think we have too much information. I think that information can help us engage in this world, the physical reality that we see around us. However, that information can be so much that it buffers us from the world itself, and that's when information becomes a problem.
Can you say a little bit more about when you say it buffers us from the world itself? Right. One of the issues we're confronting is that we just spend a lot of time sitting in front of machines processing information. Can you say a little bit, what's the line for you when the information becomes too much? It seems like you have some kind of, information is generally good for you, but there's some threshold. Can you articulate that threshold for me?
Absolutely. I think applied knowledge is a very useful thing. The internet can be a great resource when you go out and use it. However, you can spend the whole day on the internet. And I'm sure that's not a concrete line, but that's just an example I can think of where instead of going out and using what you learn, you just spend all day in a world of information.
Can you say a little bit more about the difference, if we can try to probe the difference between sort of, do you think all knowledge is just a kind of information consumption? You know, so for instance, do you think there's a difference between Googling something and exercising judgment?
Gee, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm not sure. I think that in Googling something, you're exercising judgment. So I think that they're not too dissimilar. However, certainly the internet does provide, does alleviate the individual with certain responsibilities of self, like discovery, I guess, in the actual world. So,
can you say a little more? How are you using your judgment when you Google something? Why isn't a machine using its judgment instead of you using your judgment?
Because the machine is reliant on you to put in information, and you know, ultimately, I guess the individual holds the responsibility of how they engage that information that they receive from the internet. It's not a.
And how would you know, right? Because you say, all right, so you have a machine, and you're supposed to make judgments about how to use it. So you have a question, right? How am I supposed to use my machine? How do you figure that out? Can you Google how to use Google? I'm not asking that flippantly. Like, where do you get the information to know how to judge how to use these machines? Do the machines decide for you?
That's a very good point. I think there are certain limitations, restrictions. However, I would say that there is some self-discovery in that information area, I guess. It would be self-discovery, but there are limitations that the technology does put on you. So in a certain sense, I guess you are restricted and maybe even, I don't want to say, like, determined by the Google, but certainly your answers are determined by Google, I guess, yeah.
Gee, thanks for kicking it off with us. I really appreciate you being the first one.
All righty, thank you.
Take care. Our number on this Socrates Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And Nick Smith is with me. He's the co-host. The question we're pondering with you is, do we have too much information? And Nick, as we look at this question, our executive producer, Keith Shields, decided to examine it from a strictly biological perspective.
My name is Robert Mayer. I'm professor and chair of the psychology department and a faculty member in the new major in neuroscience and behavior at UNH Durham. In thinking about whether the brain ever has too much information to deal with, we have to think of several things. The first is that the brain has a very, very limited ability to deal with information. There's only a limited amount of information that we can think about at a moment in time while we're trying to process that information. This is what cognitive scientists call working memory. For example, when you read a book, we usually have an idea of the general plot line. We might remember a few scenes that really grabbed our attention. And these are relatively permanent. These are things that you might recall years later. On the other hand, there's a lot of information in the individual sentences that you lose. In a way, this is very important because if we had too much memory, too much information, it would be very hard to make decisions when you have too much information to think about in making that decision. One difficulty, though, too many distractions, too much irrelevant information limits our ability to control our attention, to represent information in working memory, to switch between tasks, or to make decisions. Think of the problem of trying to read a difficult book while watching TV and carrying on a conversation. There's simply too many distractions, too much information to think optimally. The idea really comes from old studies in cognitive psychology. And these studies were testing the ability of humans to remember information, for instance, strings of numbers. And it turns out that most people remember around 7 or 8 numbers in a row, which is called the magic number 7, which sort of represents the amount of information that one can process at a given moment in time. I think that's why the soundbite is so effective in a political campaign. Our brain likes not having to work too hard. It likes not to have to expend unnecessary energy. As humans become more nuanced, as the number of facts that we have to deal with become more complex, it becomes much harder to identify what is important and to come up with a very clear-cut course of action that's directed by that information. There almost seems to be a paradox in that we can say that we need to know more information about how the brain works so we can understand information about overload. The problem of information overload is really a problem about too much information at a given point in time in making a decision. Having information available can be very useful. When I write a paper, rather than having to remember extensive amounts of literature, I can simply go to an online source and I have information at my fingertips electronically. That's valuable. It saves me the effort of having to recall or to rely on having less than perfect access to the most recent literature. So although technology gives us information overload, it also gives us tools that allow us to quickly access relevant information. So that's the upside of lots of information. It's all a matter of how you use it.
Our executive producer, Keith Shields, produced that conversation with UNH psychology professor Robert Mayer. Again, the question we're looking at this hour, do we have too much information? Who decides what's too much? Who bears the consequences? Does more information lead to more truth or more confusion? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. My co-host for the Socrates Exchange is Nick Smith. And Nick, quick thoughts from you. It was real interesting to hear from the professor. No matter how much information we have, our brains can only hold so much at one time.
Yeah, it's a wonderful piece. In part, you expect a neuroscientist to sort of think this way. What really was powerful to me is this notion that the technology captures the information, and the problem is too much information at one time. So if you have more time, you could sort of sort out all the information at your leisure. The problem here becomes what we do is we sit in front of our machines and process information all the time as we're trying to consume more and more and more. And then to bring it back to Guy's question, when we're thinking about how to use the information, that piece closed with, it's all a matter of how you use it, how do we answer the questions of how we use this technology, right? Where does our judgment come from when thinking about how to use it?
All right, and Nick, I'm going to cut you off there. We'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Goodwill Industries of Northern New England, helping teens transition into the workforce through the Good Guides Mentoring Program. Details on becoming a mentor at goodwillnne.org. From the Huntington at Nashua, a life care retirement community for active retirees, offering spacious garden-style apartments and cottage homes. Details at thehuntingtonatnashua.org. And from TransCanada, generating clean electric power in New England from wind, hydro, and natural gas. Serving New England wholesale and large commercial customers, 1-877-MEGAWATT. More on the Socrates Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, addressing the foreclosure crisis. New Hampshire weather today, partly to mostly sunny with high temperatures, upper 40s, northern parts of the state, upper 50s in the south. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows tonight around 30 in the north country and mid-30s in the south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's the Socrates Exchange, where once a month we examine one question using the Socratic method of asking questions and more questions. This month, it's, do we have too much information? My co-host is Nick Smith. He's an associate professor of philosophy at UNH and project advisor to us here on the Socrates Exchange. And Nick, lots of folks wanting to jump in on this conversation. Let's go next to Troy and say hello to Henry. Henry, good morning. Thanks for joining us. What's your take on this question? Do we have too much information?
Good morning, Laura. I believe we do have too much information. Not so much in the amount of information, but the way information is delivered nowadays. I believe the internet replaced creative dialogue with an overload monologue, whereas, 20 years ago, we would sit in a coffee shop and debate issues and topics, gather information and process it at a slow pace. Nowadays, we spend more time on the internet. Information is loaded onto our screen, and there is no interaction, so we process it differently. The lack of interpersonal, interaction is definitely visible, especially in the younger generations.
Henry, that's a very interesting observation. Let's push on this a little bit. part of what we often hear in these discussions of too much information is I don't want to necessarily call it a nostalgia, but a sense that in the past there's sort of this image of, say, you know, two friends walking through the woods together having a conversation. And that's somehow, you know, a superior way of not just understanding and relating the world, but interacting with people and et cetera. But when I go out in the woods sometimes and have a conversation with my friends or my children or my wife, if anything, that's even more overstimulating, right? Because there is the rustle of leaves and the colors and the smells and the sounds and the intensity. Right, in a way, I have more TMI problems when I'm out having a walk in the woods than I do when I'm sitting in front of my machine.
Right.
Why is this something different, right? I mean, you're sort of saying it's the monological nature of it, but Facebook is not really monological. Twitter's not really monological, right? So you have all the comment boards. You can go to the comment boards for this show, and you know, we've broadened the conversation so widely. So what exactly is the problem for you with these new kinds of information? Because in a way, we're always drowning in too much information, right? Even if we're in a sensory deprivation tank, we're still drowning in too much information.
Well, yes, we are. But the you mentioned Facebook, for example. I find most of the comments on Facebook, personally, I don't do Facebook, Twitter, or MySpace, any of this. I find it very anonymous, and people tend to show different sides in an anonymous environment. Whereas in an interactive environment, individual to individual, they would behave and act differently.
And you think better for – tell you a little bit more about why doesn't that anonymity encourage honesty and, you say things you wouldn't otherwise say, and we have all these platforms that, you know, people are expressing more than they expressed
yes,
previously.
Yes, they are, but it has the mob mentality. There is the anonymity allows people to express themselves perhaps more freely, but it's also more rude and it's more self-absorbed.
And say a little more, why do you think behavior is getting worse? Sorry, so there's an argument here that technology is making our behaviors somehow worse. Is that a kind of, let me just suggest it, a kind of elitism on your part that sort of, you know, we used to be better behaved and
perhaps.
You know, we unite each other and now we all get to sort of just shout out in the internet and say crass, rude things?
Perhaps. Internet allows people to be more self-absorbed. Certainly, it's if you look at most message boards, it's very egoistic.
Henry, can I ask you a question? It's Laura here. You and Nick are having a great conversation about the quality of information. What about the quantity then, Henry? Do we have too much?
I believe we do. As I mentioned previously, 20 years ago, we would sit in a coffee shop and discuss a topic, and until the topic was sort of done and over with, we wouldn't move on to a different topic. Whereas nowadays with Google search, you punch in a search term and it shows 200 million unrelated results. Just to sort through it, I believe the quality went down.
Okay. Henry, thanks a lot. Appreciate you being on the Socrates Exchange with us.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us on the Socrates Exchange. Nick, let's take another one. This is Jason in Portsmouth. Hi, Jason. Thanks for waiting. What do you think about the question we're pondering? Do we have too much information?
Well, I'm having information overload with all the angles of approaching the subject, I think. I'm actually very excited. Somebody who works by himself in his own company, I'm very excited about the fact that at my fingertips, in terms of content, there's just so much information available at my fingertips, especially also, being a documentary filmmaker, doing some preliminary research. It's fantastic to have all of this information. Where I think we're lacking is, it seems like because this information, so much information is readily available, it seems like we're more happy to stop at that level. We're more, we need a fact, we go find a fact, we get a fact. Where I'm concerned is that it doesn't seem to be as much the catalyst for curiosity to probe deeper. So that coffee shop conversation is, it used to be more about trying to figure things out that we didn't know and discussing, you know, how to find out and everything. Now we all have facts at our fingertips, and we need to still have the curiosity to probe deeper. You know, we're all very shallow-level experts on everything now, but I'm curious about what information is actionable and what information makes me want to probe deeper.
Nicholas Carr wrote a book called The Shallows, and it makes a similar sort of argument that we are sort of existing on this superficial, shallow, but infinitely wide territory now.
As deep as a puddle.
Yeah. Can you explain? You're saying we have this access to facts, but you want more.
What more is there besides just the aggregation of facts? I think an example of that is I get very tired maybe now having political discussions because everybody has all these facts. Some of them are right and some of them are wrong. And we seem to be happy to debate at that level of where I'm more curious is in what's the information, say, politically, that's going to allow us to do something about it. And we don't have the patience to probe the more nuanced and the deeper levels, the more intricate parts of the conversation where we could end up maybe having an agreement on what to do, where, you know, to get off the computer, to get out of the coffee shop, to go out into the world and engage with some of these problems. Now we're very happy to have just a very surface level of awareness of basic, say, political facts, and we trade those back and forth without probing deeper.
There's been interesting studies lately that we have this sense that all this information will somehow make us smarter and more informed, and what we're increasingly finding is that people go to the internet just to reinforce what they already think. We have this sort of social confirmation bias where we all sort of consume information that only confirms instead of challenges our views. Can you just take a moment to try to – what exactly is missing from this consumption of information, right? You seem to think there's a next deeper level, and this is, you know, similar to the question we were discussing with Guy. What is that deeper level, right? What kind of knowledge is there that's not just information processing?
Well, I think you just hit it right there. I think we're conflating information with knowledge.
And what's the difference?
I think knowledge is a deeper understanding, and it often in my way of thinking, a deep and rich enough understanding to be able to take action or do something or use that information. I don't have a lot of patience for conversations around a topic of information in which the ability to use that information and do something about it. So in other words, it's the same idea of everyone's kind of stuck on the internet as information. I'm interested in the information that allows us to close the laptop, walk out of the coffee shop, and actually affect something. And
so
I think is it
the practical application piece gets important to you? Because, right, there's lots of DIY sites, and right there's all sorts of political activism sites that tell you, right, here are some facts, here's how you go, you know, rally your local community. There, mm-hmm. You know, that's increasingly where people go to not only consume information but learn how to apply the information. Is there anything besides just information and sort of DIY guides on how to apply that information?
And DIY guides.
Do it yourself.
Do it yourself.
Well, I think if you don't take that too strictly and we all learn to apply our information and then apply that information in what? Having experiences, again, outside of the coffee shop, outside of the laptop, that is where knowledge comes from. You know, I know that, I mean, philosophy is interesting because a lot of people think it's essentially just sitting and thinking. You know what I mean? But I think a deeper level of knowledge is gained by a deeper understanding of information, applying and analyzing that information, and having real-world experiences around that information. So it's not just about maybe learning how to fix your bike, but it's learning how to fix your bike so you can take a bike ride and experience other things.
Well, another way to look at that question is you know, whether one should fix her bike, right? The question of why we should do things, right? The question of values, right? It's very mm-hmm. difficult to Google to learn your own values, right? Sort of why
that would be interesting. Google values,
right? You know why you would do anything, why you want to get from point A to point B, as opposed to just being inundated with information, right? There seems to be this is a very powerful tool for conveying information. it doesn't seem like a very powerful tool for teaching values.
Jason, thanks a lot for joining us.
And it's not a powerful tool for gaining experiences unless you make that translation yourself.
Well, I love, Jason, how you and our earlier caller are kind of building on the earlier callers saying, get out of the coffee shop, close your laptop, and go do something. Thanks a lot for joining us, Jason.
You got it.
Our number for the Socrates Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Nick Smith, up next is Jim in Merrimack. Jim, your thoughts on the question? And it looks like we lost Jim. On the number 1-800-892-6477, let's try Nick. Linda in Meredith. Linda, your thoughts on the question? Do we have too much information? What do you think?
I believe we have too much information. 24/7, you can get on Google. And as someone said earlier, the information could be narrow. You just get what Google says. There are other sites, I suppose, yahoo.com. You can go and see what information you can get there.
If you think there's too much information, why don't you just turn it off and walk away?
Well, I do, personally.
Why don't others? It's kind of weird, right? Because we used to live in an age of information scarcity. Now we live in an age of information abundance. And, you know, we would think this would be all around good, right? We would just sort of consume less if we have an abundance. Why is there this worry that there's too much, right? It's like we don't say there's too much water or
there needs to be a balance. It's just that people seem to be on computers a lot. You just look around and people are on their phones. People are on the computers a lot. They're not interacting with each other.
And what exactly is the – right? So there's some costs and some benefits. What exactly is the loss, right? What are we losing, and why is it somehow worse for you? If there's too much information, right? I mean, we start to wonder, right, if there's too much, what do we do? Do we just try to walk away? If we can't walk away, do we need to stop the production of information?
Well,
in order to answer that, we have to figure out, all right, what's the cost? What are we losing in this process?
Well, you have to figure out what is the purpose of life? Is the purpose of life sitting at your computer all day gathering information?
The purpose of life is being smart, knowing a lot, sure. What other purposes might there be?
Relating to everything on Earth. I believe that's the purpose of our life. It's not to sit in front of a computer and gather more information.
Well, what if I'm reading about trees and birds and children and relating to things that way? Is that somehow inferior than actually, you know, looking at an eagle in a tree or talking with a child? Is there a real serious difference between, we can be really interested and connected and passionate learners and sit in front of our computers? Is that not right?
I think that's valuable, definitely. I have a child that goes on the computer to find out about nature and countries, because you can't just go there to see him in person. But there has to be a balance. You need to get off the computer and
Wow, there's so much there.
Hey, Linda, I have a question for you. You know, you seem to be criticizing, as some other callers have, people for sitting in front of a computer too long instead of the information that's actually being spit out by said computer. So maybe, Linda, it's not we have too much information, but we're not using our time wisely, which is a whole different question.
That's true. Everybody has free will to do what they want to in life. So,
well, Linda, it's great to hear from you. Thanks for chiming in today. All right.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
The number here in the Socrates Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Nick, let's take another one. That was great hearing from Linda. And Martin's up next in Concord. Hi, Martin, you're on the Socrates Exchange. Go ahead, give
Hi,
us
Laura.
Your take. Yeah, do we have
Hi,
too much information?
Laura, thanks for taking my call. I really was intrigued by the idea that was brought up by a couple of the callers about the nostalgia of a different way of getting and processing information. I think, several things have changed in our information available culture that we have. I mean, we all know that we can get on the internet and find just about anything we want to learn. And the question, to me, in my mind at least, comes down to a couple of problems with potential problems with information overload. Like, how do you figure out the relevance of a particular set of information to the thing you're trying to accomplish at a given time? And how do you figure out the accuracy or the factual basis for the information you're getting? Information is just an asset. It's a thing. And the question really boils down to, what do you do with it?
The first is two slightly different issues come up there. The first is, you know, if you're worried about relevancy and accuracy, might not itself be a software problem, right? You just need a better app to filter what's relevant to you, right? That we just need more sophisticated Googling and some kind of more Consumer Reports for information sort of screening. Because it seems like those set of problems might be able to be solved just by more information, right? The problem isn't too much information; it's that we need more to evaluate the information that we have. Is that possible? That we could solve those problems just with more information?
I guess a Socratic answer to a Socratic question is yeah maybe. There might be a class of answers that could, be satisfied by that ability to filter the inputting information. But there's also another class of...
Martin, we're losing you. I'm sorry about that. I do apologize. I hope you join us for another Socrates Exchange, but we were losing his phone there, Nick. Further thoughts on, could we solve this too much information by more information? Sites like ProPublica gives you supposedly unbiased Consumer Reports, a longtime trusted
fact
one.
Check.
So
factcheck.com.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go into our break, Nick, sharing a couple postings from our website. And you can continue this conversation, by the way, on the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org. Nick, here's one from John. He says, I would never want to go back to the time when the information that I want or need is not immediately available to me. John says, since on any given day I may not know what information is important or needed, I don't want any of it made unavailable. He says, our goal should not be to limit the information available to any of us, but for each of us to develop the strategies and tools to easily sort through and access information important to us. So that's a posting from John. Here's another one. This one came in pretty early. It's from Paul. He says, my observation is that as electronic information proliferates, the quality of information is inversely proportional to the quantity. We are buried in information rather than facts. So that's part of a posting from Paul. You can continue to post your thoughts on the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org and continue to call in 1-800-892-6477. More of your calls coming up.
You've spoken and we've heard you. More programming, less on-air fundraising. So we've committed to eliminating our winter membership drive altogether with one caveat. We need to raise $465,000 in our upcoming fall drive. Now we're counting on you to renew your membership, become a new member, or make an additional gift to help us meet our goal this month and get rid of the winter drive. Please call 1-888-805-NHPR or visit nhpr.org to make a donation.
This is NHPR. Support comes from UR members and the Lexus HS Hybrid, reducing petroleum use with an EPA-rated combined 35 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. More online at lexus.com/HS. And Manchester Community Music School and the Nashua Symphony Orchestra presenting a family Halloween concert in Manchester on October 30th at 4 p.m. Details at mcmusicschool.org. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll consider nursing homes in the Granite State after a report rated one quarter of them below average. Email us your thoughts and experiences with this topic before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today, it's the Socrates Exchange. My co-host is Nick Smith. We're pondering the question, do we have too much information? And as we look at this question, if there's one profession that really has to deal with the issue of too much information, it's journalism. Our executive producer, Keith Shields, spoke with a longtime New Hampshire reporter.
My name is David Tyrrell Wysocki. I was an Associated Press reporter for 32 years, currently the executive director of the Naki S. Loeb School of Communications in Manchester. Access to information is increased for journalists and for the general public, of course, through the internet. The biggest change for journalists is being able to get reaction and to research a situation now, as opposed to researching the history of a situation. Take, for example, if you're writing a story about the Asian longhorn beetle, in the old days, which might have been 10 years ago. You might call an expert. You might look it up in the dictionary. You might be able to check a clip file and find out what has been going on with the Asian longhorn beetle, where it had been, the history of it. Today, if you're doing a story on the Asian longhorn beetle, you Google it and you find out now it's a threat in this community. Now, here are what states are doing, or here's what the Forest Service is doing to try to prevent the spread. It's the immediacy of the research, I think, has been the biggest change, in addition, of course, to just the wealth of information that's available. Having so much more information is not always positive. Obviously, the information is out there, but who knows if it's reliable? And that's, I think, one of the biggest drawbacks. There's so much information there, and it's so easy to post. It's so easy to manipulate. And you might run into a chat room or read various blogs that are all commenting on each other, which leaves the source kind of nebulous. You're trying ultimately to get to the source of the information, to get the best take on the information rather than two, three, four, five people commenting on somebody commenting on what they heard from another source. I think that's one of the biggest drawbacks. And for the public, trying to discern the source and wade through the information and vet it. I don't think there's a problem with the more information leading to less truth. More information leads to more opportunity to find out what the truth is. I would rather have more information than less information, though, because I think it makes a more complete story. For the consumer, is it ever too much information? People say that all the time. I don't want to know where you went for dinner. I don't need to know that on your Facebook page. But others thrive on knowing where you went for dinner. And it's not just a Facebook situation. You go to a news organization website, and you might find 50 headlines on that page, as opposed to, you know, in the old days, on a newspaper page, you might find 8. It's easier to choose what to read. When you're on a website, whoa, it takes a long time sometimes to wade through everything that's there to get to what you really want to read about. I don't think you run the risk of having too much information, especially if you learn how to manage your time in judging the information. If you want to learn more about a topic, it's there. So in your mind, that's not too much information. If you've learned all you want to learn and it keeps coming, then it's too much information. People say it in the grocery store going down the cereal aisle. Oh my goodness, there are too many choices. And they go back to their favorite. Well, the same thing happens with information. Some might say there are too many choices and go to their favorite sources of information. It's kind of the same thing. It's being the consumer.
That conversation with David Tirowaisaki was produced by Exchange Executive Producer Keith Shields. And the question we're pondering this hour on the Socrates Exchange is, do we have too much information? Nick Smith is my co-host. And Nick, let's go next to Springfield, Vermont. Glenn's on the air. Glenn, your take on the question. Do we have too much information?
We certainly do not. I would certainly advocate for more and more. The access is incredible. This is a renaissance of information. There are certainly incredible choices that we have to make in terms of how we pursue things and what we pursue, but that's sort of part of the human condition. That's always been there, to be wise or to be unwise.
I love that you use the word renaissance. I haven't heard that used a lot. Nick Smith?
Sure. Can you, if you think this is an unqualified, good and unqualified way, where do you think, if you were to imagine... Let's go back to the quote we read from the Google founders about having all information available to us and directly attached to our brains. Where do you see this going, say, you know, 20 years out? What does the future of information look like to you? Say, you know, the iPhone of 2030. What does that look like to you? And do you just find that completely happy and optimistic future?
I'm optimistic about it, and I'll tell you why. I think we will have to learn as individuals and collectively in the type of society we are in, better questions to ask that will solidify the information. There are giant ideas out there we have not discovered. Take something like entropy, and that's a big idea, and there are a lot of small things that fit within it. We explore small things, and eventually we make them coalesce into something a little bigger so we can hold that and lose some of the detail. That's the fun part, connecting the dots.
Can you just say, what does human civilization look like when we have But what does the fabric of our life look like with these 2030 iPhones? Because, you know, some of my older colleagues, they see, you know, the 18-year-olds on campus, and they sort of look like a different creature altogether, right? And the devices of 2030 are gonna look like magic to us. And I have a hard time actually wrapping my head around what that future even looks like, and what sort of information processors my children will be when they're in college. Your optimism, I wonder, why do you have why are you so confident that this is, you know, good in an unqualified? Why you seem to have some faith that information gets us to better lives, better humanity,
more truth.
Why do you have that faith?
Boy, you've loaded that one down.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Let me respond as best I can. Number one, I think we're in childhood now. This is a renaissance, but we're children in respect to information, and we will grow. But where we're going to grow by 20 or 30 years, I don't have a clue. But I trust the idea of, if you will, an evolution that will take place. Evolution favors taking in more and adapting.
I have to ask, in terms of information processing, do you think humans are going to continue to be the better information processors compared to our machines, right? Because when you listen to the Google founders, our phones will very soon be smarter than us, right, and better information processors than us. And this is not to sort of, you know, invoke robot wars or something, but to, right, ask what does the future really look like when, right, the machines are better in some respects at thinking than we are, and we are so wedded to them that we, right, we would be, you know, we would look like fools to turn them off. Right? I mean, I just wonder, what does civilization look like in that future?
Well, I think I would add this. Each one of us knows or recognizes about 6,000 proper names. We can do that. Okay, if I ask you now, do you know Arnold Zech? Within a second or two, you will say yes or no. A computer would have to go through that whole list of names to determine whether or not it was on the list. We can still jump. We can get from A to C without hitting down on B. I know there are computers now that they claim they're going to be able to intuit things. Well, maybe they will, but not yet.
Well, this is great, Glenn, and I'm struck by your usage of the word renaissance. You know, who are we to say that 100 years from now people will look back at 2010 as another great renaissance instead of,
or if there'll be people looking back.
That's a fair question.
Glenn, this is great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And let's go next back to Vermont. In Heartland, Vermont, Derek's joining us. Derek, your thoughts on the question this hour. Do we have too much information?
Well, I've been thinking and listening to what you've been saying, and I actually think that what we may have is too much specialization. And what I mean by that is that every discipline, and there are lots of them, has its own language, its own vocabulary, and a lot of times that vocabulary excludes people from other disciplines or just general understandings. And as a consequence, we actually, in some cases, seem to have a lot more information than there really is. It's just that it's inaccessible because of differences in the vocabulary of specific disciplines.
Good. This is an important point. That in a way, it's the problem isn't so much the new abundance of information. The problem is that we aren't, in some way, smart enough to process it all. Right. So it's like, you know, the problem isn't the supply. It's the, you know, our inability to consume that supply intelligently. Which, you know, again brings us back to, if knowledge is really just some kind of information processing, right? If what the human brain is an information processor, right? We have some, right, limitations on that, right? Just like I can't see 100 miles away, I can't, you know, process. I have caps on how much information I can process. And there we start to wonder again, you know, the specificity, the specialness of humanity in terms of information processing is really, really in question, right? Are we any longer the higher being when we talk about processing information, right? And lots of ways, and I'm always struck by this whenever I play Scrabble with my family, Right, and I imagine it, right, if my computer were playing Scrabble, right, what a joke it would be. It would be so much better and so much faster, right? So, you know, even setting aside, you know, something like chess, right, it's just so much better at processing information. Do you think humans will retain any elevated place in the future, given sort of the significance of information processing?
I'm not sure humans have attained an elevated place yet. I'm really not. I think that we may be in a period of temporary elevation, but we've also outgrown our sustainability, and so it may just be temporary.
Good. So maybe the information is out evolving us.
Perhaps so, but I really do think I had an experience not too long ago where I cut gemstones, and I was talking to a friend of mine who's a geologist, and it turns out we were looking at a stone and we were talking about the same phenomenon in it, except that we had totally different language for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we approached it from completely different.
Well, sure. Just speaking in, you know, in English versus German or Spanish or.
Oh no! I'm talking about the language.
Of course, but even yeah. You know, how limited we all are with our information, just in terms of the language we speak, right?
I don't mean language. You know, in terms of foreign language or English or whatever, I'm talking about the language of the discipline.
Of course,
so all the technology, the terms, and so forth.
Hmm?
All the terms that different specialties
use. The terminology,
use.
Yeah,
right.
But it's gone beyond terminology. I mean, I go and talk to my computer guy, and I have no idea what he's talking about because he's speaking in computerese.
Right. Okay? I've had that experience too, Derek.
And if I go and talk to a doctor frequently, they get way beyond me. And if I go and talk to a plant specialist. For gardening, they're way beyond what I understand, but it's actually more often a difference in our understanding of our terminology.
Well, Derek,
than
thank
it
you.
Is in the actual information that you know that you want to pass back and forth.
And this is great, and it's a point that no one else has brought up. So I really appreciate you calling in. Thank you, Derek.
Hey, bye now.
And let's take one more, Nick. This is Phil, who says he's calling in from Mitchell, South Dakota. So, welcome. Phil, you're on the year. What do you think of this question? Too much information?
I think there's too much information, but it's very beneficial. For me, I'm a native of New England, and I like to keep up to date what's going on in my old neck of the woods, you know, by going on the internet, like when the old man of the mountain fell. I was able to share it with my Sunday morning Bible study group that next morning, and I was able to show them pictures of the old man of the mountain on the Manchester, New Hampshire Union Leader website. And
so, Phil, that's great. You're saying that we've got all this information.
Yes, because when I first came out to school here in South Dakota, I was getting my hometown's newspaper a week late.
I see.
Now I can access it online, and I now can find out what's going on at this present moment.
Nick?
Yeah, there are certainly these serious benefits of we can stay connected, right? Just like Facebook allows us to stay connected with friends that may live thousands of miles away, and it seems like some connection is better than none. Do you think that there's ever... too much of that, right? You're unable to either, grow roots in your new place because you're so connected to the old, or right, you're busy keeping up with your old friends, and it's, you know, instead of making new friends, sort of, you know, going out and, you know, being in the public square, you're instead, you know, on the computer, right, being a computer dweller, right, instead of being out in the world making. Do you ever find that you spend your life doing those things on the computer rather than being out in the world?
I think I have a balance. I have friends out here, and I read the local paper, and I listen to South Dakota Public Broadcasting out here. So,
well, and Phil, we're glad that you are listening to New Hampshire Public Radio all the way out in South Dakota. I think that's a first. So thanks for joining us on the Socrates Exchange. And Nick, real quickly, today's topic, and this has been great, dovetails into a major project at UNH. What's going on?
Yes, we for a few years now we've conducted the university dialogue on various sorts of themes, and this year's theme is on too much information. And we have several faculty who have created short papers on this topic from all sorts of different disciplines, and we run events throughout the state, film series, discussion series. You'll find UNH folks all around. We have all of our materials up online. You can read the essays. You can participate in various kinds of events and discussions, as well as the archives from previous years. We've had topics on a variety of things, including health in New Hampshire and globalization and energy policy. And we get a nice broad set of perspectives from all sorts of faculty.
And speaking of too much information, we'll have information on this on our website. We'll have a link to where you can find out more information on this project at UNH. Real quick, Nick, you'll be back a month from now, November 18th, for another Socrates Exchange. What's the question?
The question is what is gratitude? We'll be sort of getting around Thanksgiving time, and we want to get underneath exactly what is gratitude? Is it something you need to feel, a kind of emotion? Is it something you morally have to think? Why do we, for instance, require children to say thank you when we give them food? Right, we're required to give them food, so why do they need to say thank you? Is this just sort of banal etiquette, or is there something really significant that we should be appreciating what we have, and that there's some important connection between appreciating what we have and sort of the meaning and quality of our lives?
Great. Well, I look forward to seeing you then. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Laura.
And the Exchange is a production of NHPR, the Socrates Exchange, made possible in part by the New Hampshire Humanities Council. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. The producer is Will Roselip. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. The executive producer of the Exchange and the Socrates Exchange is Keith Shields.